Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Happy Election Eve, everyone. I get so excited and just a little nervous. I can't even imagine how candidates feel day before the election, all that hard work. And I say it every election cycle, I admire every single political candidate who wants to jump into the arena these days because it is not easy. You endure attacks, the constant fundraising for statewide candidates, the constant travel. Can't even imagine. So if this is something that you've embarked on doing, I mean, God bless you, because I can't imagine it's easy. A few things to get to today. Of course, we're going to talk about just final specifics on voting, making sure you get those ballots in. I'm going to turn my phone off so I don't get interrupted on the podcast anymore. Also going to set expectations for election night and beyond. Of course, with a lot of states doing mail-in voting, including here in Washington state, it's important to know kind of how the races will be called, when the races will be called by the media, and I'll kind of go through some of that with you just to temper expectations. Also, for subscribers, I am going to do a special morning live chat for subscribers on Patreon and Locals Wednesday morning. So as opposed to Tuesday night when everything's in flux, we're going to get up bright and early Wednesday morning. So in case you had to go to bed and couldn't watch the results, we'll have a special live chat on Wednesday morning. I can answer your questions as well for Undivided subscribers. So be on a lookout for a link for that on Patreon or Locals. And then of course, we'll have our regular Wednesday episode in the afternoon. We don't tend to know a lot on election night. I mean, certainly across the country where some states have day of voting and you get results. But in Washington state, I don't think there'll be a lot of races that we're going to be able to call, at least not the interesting races. So we'll discuss that. I also want to talk about today on the show, what comes after Tuesday? You know, candidates have made a lot of promises this election cycle. They have made a lot of claims, you know, that they're the party that can deal with some of the biggest crises that we face. You know, for Democrats, they've really reversed course on public safety. And we need to, as voters, make sure that we hold them to those promises if they win. And for Republicans, you know, they've really positioned themselves as the party that can rein in this out of control spending, the party that can help lower costs for American families. And so I want to talk about what our expectations should be as voters, as citizens, moving forward past Tuesday into the new year. And then unfortunately into 2024, which is another topic we're going to cover today. We're hearing more about Donald Trump's plans for 2024. I'm not ready for a presidential campaign. I hate American elections for that reason. I mean, I love elections, but I hate the election cycle and how long and drawn out it is. Oh, it's exhausting. But we're hearing more from President Donald Trump. But gosh, you know, just starting off again, Election Eve, if you haven't got your ballots in already, please do so. You can put them in a Dropbox location. You go to your county election website and they should have a list of Dropbox locations. You can do that up to 8 p.m. tomorrow on Election Day in Washington State. You can also return your ballot via U.S. mail. No postage required, but remember, it has to be postmarked no later than Election Day. So if you're going to go that route, I always think a good method is to bring it directly to the post office so you make sure that it gets that stamp on it. But gosh, I mean, in these final days, holy moly, these TV ads have been nonstop. I'm just like, I have to like mute the TV when the commercials come on because I just can't do it anymore. And of course, the desperation and the mistruths have just gotten more and more frequent and worse and obvious the closer we get to Election Day. And mailers, where is my stack of mailers? Hold on. Oh my gosh. So these are just a few I pulled out to talk about today. So I actually live in a really interesting area because I'm in East King County and I live in the 8th Congressional District. So I live in a critical swing district for control of Congress where the Democratic incumbent Kim Schreier is going against her Republican challenger, Matt Larkin. So we've been inundated at our house. We also have a legislative district race that's considered kind of a toss-up race. So we've just had, I mean, people spending money, so much money to reach voters in my area. And I just, oh my God, I cannot wait. I'm going to read you some of these mailers because, you know, I wonder how many voters these actually work on. Because to me, you know, some of the imagery is so transparent and I have to believe that they really only work on, people who were going to vote that way anyway, because some of them are just so bad. And so I thought I'd go over. These are, I think most of these are 8th Congressional District, if not all of them. Oh, a couple of them. Well, they've got a King County Prosecutor's Race one in here I want to talk about. But man, I mean, you know, a lot of them have been focused on abortion because I think if you're a true swing voter, like who's really on the fence and you haven't made a decision based on, you know, the economy or public safety, I do think abortion is an important issue. It's why I focused on it so much in my interview with Tiffany Smiley. I got a lot of questions. Why did you talk about abortion so much? It's because if you're really on the fence at this juncture, that might be an issue that's going to sway you. And so it was an opportunity for Tiffany Smiley to clear the air, set the record straight on where she stands and whether her record or her views on that issue have been misinterpreted. So a lot on Matt Lorcan about abortion in these mailers, which is not a surprise either. I mean, Matt Lorcan does have a very conservative stance on abortion. He has said that he is pro-life, even in cases of rape and incest, and he's not ruled out being in favor of a national abortion ban. He says he hasn't wanted to pontificate on any hypotheticals. But, you know, he certainly is further to the right than other Republicans who have tried to challenge Kim Schreier for the seat. I just laugh, though, at some of these ads. And keep in mind, some of these are from the candidate, but a lot of them are from political action committees, which candidates are prohibited from coordinating with. So when you see these mailers, they're not always coming from or approved directly by the candidate. Like this one is a political action committee. It talks about how Matt Lorcan is a danger. And then it's got a woman sobbing in her underpants on the back of it. I mean, presumably someone who got pregnant. Can you see this on the video podcast? Presumably someone who got pregnant. And I feel bad, but it's obviously just an actress or a stock photo. But woman sobbing in her underpants at the thought of Matt Lorcan being the next congressman from Washington's 8th Congressional District. And then this is a ad from the Washington State Republican Party. And I hate... Can we stop using this picture of Kim Schreier? It's like a picture of her dancing. And she's just, you know, she was just having fun, but it's not flattering. It makes her look like a goofball. And so Republicans use it, I swear to God, in every single mailer about Kim Schreier. Let the woman have a little fun, okay? So I'm not a big fan of that one, the imagery in that either. This is a King County prosecutor's race ad. And again, why are we using these unflattering photos of female candidates? This one is of Lisa Mannion. Not a great picture of Lisa Mannion. And it's like got her dark and gloomy with Seattle in the background and a hole cut in a fence. And so it's just funny. It's this imagery that's really trying to get you to have this visceral reaction to the candidate. But man, I do not envy female candidates because opponents always tend to use like the most unflattering picture of them. And I just can only imagine if I ever ran for office, the pictures they'd use of me. I'm not a good picture taker. Let's see. Again, imagery. This one's a Kim Schreier ad. If you're only listening to the podcast, it's got a burning Seattle police cruiser in the background. It's got an unflattering picture of her. It says, Kim Schreier, bought and paid for by radical extremists. This one is against Matt Lorcan. Who was it bought by? Let's see. Paid for by the Washington State Democratic Central Committee. And it's got this Matt Lorcan saying, quote, I align with Marjorie Taylor Greene. And it's got like this blood spatter almost on it. It's so transparent. These, though, are my favorite. I'll go through these really, really quick. But these are hilarious. And they're just, oh my God, who are these bought by? Hold on, let me just check really quick. So I want to see if they're from the candidate. Paid for by the House Majority PAC. So this is paid for by the Political Action Committee trying to keep Democrats in the House majority. So Matt Larkin's a business owner. You know, he's not hurting for money, but it's got all these ads. They're all in the same vein. But they've got, like this one has Matt Lorcan in a tux and a big stack of money behind him. It says, Matt Lorcan is worth millions. He thinks he can do whatever he wants. Then it's got a private jet behind him. I mean, these are all like Photoshopped pictures. This one has Matt Lorcan in front of a stack of money, his face Photoshopped onto the body of a golfer. So he's just like this rich golfer. Millionaire Matt Lorcan, you think the rules don't apply to you? And there are a bunch like this. This one's got him in front of a mega yacht. Meet millionaire Matt Lorcan. He thinks the rules don't apply to him. Let's see, another one with a yacht. Matt Lorcan's face on a Photoshopped on a guy like sailing on a yacht, which I also think this is funny. And I mean, I get what they're doing there, but I've been to Congresswoman Kim Schreier's house. I went there for an interview with her the last election cycle in 2020. She is a doctor. Let me just tell you, I won't tell you where she lives, obviously, but the woman's doing well. She lives in a very nice house. So you can call Matt Larkin a millionaire, but it's not as if Kim Schreier is living in poverty, okay? So again, I can't wait to stop getting these ads in our mailbox. The manipulation is just fascinating. And speaking of manipulation, if you've not read it already, last night I posted an article on my Patreon and Locals pages. It doesn't have a paywall, so even if you're not a subscriber, you can go read it. The headline is Midterm Manipulation: Democrats Are Hoping to Gaslight Their Way to Victory. And in it, I talk about really what I've seen is a new low for Democrats across the country, from the very top to the very bottom, when it comes to their acceptance of, you know, gaslighting and deception as a campaign tactic. And the reason I focused on Democrats in this article, and I've had some Democrats who've been mad, like, oh, Republicans, this and this. Democrats have made it clear that they believe they're the party that has the moral high ground. I mean, since Donald Trump, was elected in 2016. And then to see them employ some of these really bottom of the barrel tactics. You know, I mentioned President Joe Biden. He's been really hard at work trying to spin bad economic news. You'll recall the tweet we talked about on the show last week where he said seniors are getting the biggest increase in their Social Security checks in 10 years through President Biden's leadership. It was a tweet that went on the White House page. But of course, Social Security checks are tied to inflation. So the only reason they're getting a big increase is because inflation is so bad. And to me, you know, I find this this tactic from the Biden administration, like, I don't think he's sending these tweets out, his staff is, but I find the tactic of gaslighting over the economy particularly egregious because, you know, in this case, you're trying to appeal to the needs and the struggles of senior citizens, you know, who are on a fixed income and who look at that and say, oh, good, you know, we're getting an increase in our Social Security check thanks to Biden's leadership. And to me, it's just so desperate and wrong. And one of the things I point out in this article is, you know, Joe Biden is someone who likes to talk a lot about how he grew up in a working class family in Scranton, you know, and he saw his parents struggle a lot to make ends meet, to afford to put food on the table. So for someone who grew up in that background, who claims to have seen his parents struggle with the everyday cost of living, for him to use the fears and the hopes of struggling Americans to try to keep his party in power, I think is particularly egregious. You know, I'm someone who also grew up in, I would say, a lower middle class home. Four kids, a dad that really didn't work very much. I've talked about my dad's struggles with alcoholism, couldn't keep a job, a mom who worked very hard, but it was a struggle to get by. And so, you know, I know that feeling of desperation. You know, I know what it's like to put $5 worth of gas in your car because that's all you've got. I know that feeling of the fridge being empty and the cabinets being empty. And so it bothers me to my core, I guess, to see someone like President Joe Biden, who's talked about his own family's struggles, financial struggles, to try to use, you know, try to spin what is, you know, bad economy right now in his favor. That's really disappointing to me. And so what I go on to talk about in this piece is how crap rolls downhill. I mean, you've got Biden employing these gaslighting tactics, trying to manipulate people. And so you're seeing that for Democratic candidates, you know, all the way in down ticket, down ballot races. And so I hope you get a chance to read this article. And really, I think this comes down to us and to what we're willing to accept from our political candidates. You know, I hope Democrats don't read this and get mad at me. I hope they read it and get mad at their own party. It's always been odd to me, this idea of having higher standards for the party you're opposed to. If you're a Democratic voter, for example, why would you have higher standards for Republicans? They're not the ones you're voting for. You should have the highest standards for the people you support. And so I would hope that Democrats who are, you know, outraged by Republican candidates who continue to spread the big lie about the 2020 election, I would hope that they'd be just as outraged about their own candidates who've been lying or bending the truth or trying to manipulate them we should expect more of people we support. I really believe that. And so I think, you know, the state of politics, and there's an issue right now with candidate quality, to be sure. And I think that comes down to us. You know, how much are we willing to let our own party manipulate us and treat us like we're stupid? And so we have to expect more of our own political candidates first before we can expect more of political candidates that we're not going to support. I really, truly believe that. So anyway, take a few minutes today. It's a long article, but I hope you'll take a few minutes to read it. Again, the headline, Midterm Manipulation, Democrats are hoping to gaslight their way to victory. You can read it on my Patreon page, patreon.com/undivided, or on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. And speaking of locals, quick, I just want to mention that all week, because it's election week, we're running a promo on my locals page where you can get 3 months free with a year membership, which is a great deal. You just use the promo code election. So go to brandycruz.locals.com/support. Use the promo code election and get 3 months of Undivided for free. And it's a great time to do that because we're going to have the Wednesday morning Q&A for subscribers. And so you'll have access to that as well. I have to let you know something that's been happening to me. I'm not going to be able to keep it together during this because it just tickles me. I have to let you in on something that's been happening over the weekend that I had been sort of tracking behind the scenes and that has manifested today that I find hilarious. So in the article I just mentioned on my Patreon and locals, but also on the podcast last week, remember we talked about this reverse psychology that was being employed by Washington Governor Jay Inslee and the head of the Washington State Democratic Party, Tina Podlodowski. So in the race for Secretary of State, in the general election, on the ballot is a Democrat, Steve Hobbs, and a nonpartisan, Julie Anderson. So Democrats were terrified, like, oh my God, we're going to lose because Julie Anderson's going to get some Democratic votes because she has some Democratic support, and then she's going to get all the Republican votes because Republicans aren't going to check the box for a Democrat. But then this Republican, Brad Klipper, decided to launch kind of a last-minute writing campaign, which he's not going to be able to win. I mean, writing campaigns are nearly impossible. I know his campaign is mad at me for saying that. I'm just telling the truth. And so what I see his campaign as is an opportunity for Democrats to snatch a victory from the jaws of defeat. And Democrats realize this. And so they want as many Republicans as possible to write in Brad Klippert's name instead of voting for Julie Anderson. So in an effort to try to achieve that, Governor Inslee and Tina Podlodowski put out this horribly transparent video where they tried to use a reverse psychology on Republicans, hoping that if they told Republicans, don't write in Brad Klippert, Republicans would go and do exactly that. Here's a clip from the video.
Brad Klippert is one of the worst peddlers of this election disinformation in Washington State. So whatever you do, do not write in Brad Klippert for Secretary of State. So we want to repeat, whatever you do, do not write in Brad Klippert.
So I saw that on Friday, and I was immediately like, oh, wow, they really do think Republican voters are morons, don't they? And it turns out that they don't just think Republican voters are morons. They think Republican radio hosts are morons. Because let me tell you what happened behind the scenes. Tina Podlodowski is a hyper-partisan. I mean, I genuinely think in her heart she hates Republicans. So she never talks to Republican, you know, radio personalities or pundits. And that's fine. That's her choice. But after they put out this terrible attempt at reverse psychology, she really thought she was onto something. So behind the scenes, I was told, Tina Podlodowski's office started booking radio interviews with the top conservative radio hosts in Seattle. I heard from Ari Hoffman, who said on Friday, they booked and confirmed, and Tina's folks reached out to them. So this is not conservative radio house hosts reaching out to Tina Podlodowski because they've probably done that a million times and she's always said no. So Washington State Democrats start reaching out behind the scenes to these conservative radio hosts, Ari Hoffman, Jason Rantz, and Dory Monson, saying, hey, Tina would love to come on the show and talk about why Republicans definitely should not vote for Brad Klippert. So Tina Podlodowski thinks they've put out this genius video, this reverse psychology that's going to trick Republican voters. And now she believes that she can also trick these conservative radio hosts into helping her spread this message, into helping her, via reverse psychology, convince Republican voters to write in Brad Klippert's name. So I know that this is happening behind the scenes because I'd been told by Ari Hoffman over the weekend, hey, Tina just reached out to me. I've been told by Jason Rantz. I was at a charity event for the Snohomish County Canine Foundation on Saturday, and Jason Rantz told me then, hey, Tina Podlodowski is going to come on the show. And then I also heard from my friend Dory Monson. And I thought, this woman, she really thinks she's going to fool them. It did not go as expected for Tina Podlodowski, as you can imagine. So I was keeping in touch with these three guys today, this morning, when they had all the interviews booked for. The first interview she did was a taped interview with Jason Rantz. And again, she's expecting that she's going to come on and Jason Rantz is going to be like, you're wrong. People should write in Brad Klippert. Well, here's what happened.
I think that there's an absolute opportunity for folks to make certain they're not voting for somebody like a Brad Klippert. They're voting for somebody like moderate Democrat Steve Hobbs in this race. And it is super important for folks to be out there and clarifying anything that is either wrong or a downright terrible position, which is what Brad Klippert is doing in the Secretary of State's race.
Then why wouldn't they vote for Julie Anderson?
Well, Brad Klippert is the Republican in this particular race.
Yeah, but you called Julie Anderson a Republican. Democrats have been doing that for a while now.
Well, Julie Anderson has been courting the Republican vote, and she's not been honest with Republican voters either. So I think it's an opportunity to talk to the one candidate who is being honest and who is doing the work, and that's the current Secretary of State. Look, and that's Steve Hobbs. Look, there is a poll in place right now, and Brad Klippert is gaining a considerable amount of steam in this particular race. He is right behind Steve Hobbs, if you're looking at that.
Well, that's not true. Hold on. That's not true.
No.
The reason why you're telling people not to vote for Brad Klippert and then also saying that the race is heated is because it's actually heated between Steve Hobbs and Julie Anderson, and you don't want Republicans to vote for Julie Anderson. And by the way, smart strategy if people fall for it, and I think it is a smart strategy. I would do the exact same strategy, but that's your real threat. Let's be honest. Your threat is not Brad Klippert. Your threat is Julie Anderson.
No, the threat here is Brad Klippert. I mean, I'm just back from Central and Eastern Washington. Nobody is talking about Julie Anderson. She basically broke 13% in the primary, and I know that there are a lot of voters in the state who are conservatives, who are Republicans, who are strongly opposed to election-denying elements of the party. And there has been a huge effort, particularly on social media, to write in Brad Klippert, and he has been endorsed by the Republican Party. We need to make certain, and honestly, if you're a Democrat or Republican or an independent, I want you to cast your vote. That's what this country is all about.
And I do, too.
Make sure you're not casting it for Brad Klippert.
I actually, you know what, I will say this. As the Republican, I do agree with that. The reason why I am not voting for Brad Klippert is not because I don't like him, is because it helps Steve Hobbs. I voted for Julie Anderson. I hope everyone who's listening to me will do the exact same thing. Republicans should go out and back Julie Anderson. In a perfect world, we would have a Republican candidate who made it through the primary. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And every person who writes in Brad Klippert's name makes it easier for the Democrat to win.
And then, of course, Jason Rantz ended up turning the conversation to Democrat Clyde Shavers, who's running for a House seat in Washington State and who has been caught lying about his military record and his career, yet Democrats are still backing them. And you'll notice how Tina Podlodowski quickly tries to end the interview.
There was an error in his website and an error in
how his... A specific error that
has been cleared up. You know what's not an error? Is the fact
is it Brad
that,
Klippert?
For example... It's Jesse Young out in the 26th, for example, who cannot even have staff because he has been abusive to his staff. That's something Republicans are talking about. The other thing in terms of Julie Anderson that nobody is talking about with regard to Julie Anderson is the fact that she, as every year she's been Pierce County Auditor, turnout has gone down in Pierce County. She has sent out ballots that have the wrong ballot return date. She has mishandled ballots from overseas and military folks. She's not up to the job at a Pierce County level. She's certainly not up to the job at a statewide level. So, Jason, thanks for this opportunity to talk about this. We are hitting the road between different places, and I need to get to my next campaign stop. But I appreciate the time.
Where are you headed?
I appreciate what you're doing out there.
So I can't imagine the interview with Jason Rantz went as she expected. Her plan wasn't quite working, but she had two more interviews left to do, Dory Monson and Ari Hoffman. So the next up is Dory Monson. And Dory Monson, similar to Jason Rantz, calls Tina out for her blatant attempt, a sad attempt at reverse psychology.
So I've just come back from Central and Eastern Washington, and I've heard people saying they're writing in Brad, and they should not do that. Break with your party and do not write in Brad Klippert for Secretary of State.
Okay. Now, this is so transparent, what's happening. And this is why I say I really hate this about politics. You and Jay Inslee released a video this weekend where you're both clearly reading from a script that was saying the same thing. And if I had seen that video before I cast my ballot, I would have voted for Julie Anderson. And that's what I suggest my listeners do, because, I mean, it's pretty obvious, Nate. You guys are trying to play the old reverse psychology game. And if Jay Inslee and Tina Podlizowski hate Brad Klippert this much, I'm going to vote for Brad Klippert. Because you're really afraid of Julie Anderson. A write-in candidate is not going to win Secretary of State. You really want to fight off the Julie Anderson voters here.
And then, towards the end of the interview, and Dory was on his phone because he told me there were some technical issues, but they were doing the interview just fine. The interview was lengthy, and at the end of it, Dory Monson also brings up Clyde Shavers. Listen to what happened.
Sorry.
What was misrepresented about Clyde Shavers?
Sorry. Okay.
Just tell me what was misrepresented about Clyde Shavers.
Hello?
Can you hear me, Tina?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Tina?
You cannot make this up. So now, you know, the Jason Rantz interview, she wasn't able to fool Jason Rantz or his listeners. And then you've got the Dory Monson interview, and she realizes that she's not going to be able to fool Dory Monson or his listeners. And he also asks about Clyde Shavers, and she doesn't want to talk about that. So what does she do? She pretends that she can't hear him and hangs up. So then, okay, well, what about Ari Hoffman? Well, minutes after that Dory Monson interview was taped, Tina Podlizowski cancels on Ari Hoffman. Doesn't even go through with the interview with him, even though it was booked and confirmed on Friday. And it's because she realized that maybe Republicans or conservatives aren't as dumb as she thinks they are, and that her master plan at reverse psychology failed miserably. There continues to be a lot of debate and controversy around Elon Musk now being the owner of Twitter and, you know, changes he's going to bring to the platform. I'm still not sold on the $8 a month for a verified account, although I'll probably end up doing it because you also get some other features that can help my business. So $8 a month, that's worth it to me. But Elon Musk did something this morning that has really further aggravated folks on Twitter. He dared to share his opinion on tomorrow's election. I'll read you the tweet from Elon Musk. He wrote, "To independent-minded voters, shared power curbs the worst excesses of both parties. Therefore, I recommend voting for a Republican Congress, given that the presidency is Democratic." Well, people lost it. Apparently, there are some folks who are of the belief that if you own Twitter, you're not allowed to have political opinions. I don't think Elon Musk lost his right to opinions by purchasing Twitter. But folks were just absolutely losing it over this. And I know why. And first, let me say, I agree with Elon Musk's sentiment. I wrote an op-ed for future42.org recently about the need for balance. Balance is the only backstop to bad ideas. I agree with his sentiment here wholeheartedly. I would rather have Congress spin their wheels with divided government for the next 2 years than have one party in power pushing through bad ideas with no backstop. I just don't think that that's a good, I mean, you need some checks and balances. Look at Washington State, for instance. Some of the worst things to come through the state legislature have been because of one-party rule. The law dramatically limiting police pursuits would not have passed if you had divided government. The long-term care tax that nobody needed or wanted would not have passed if you had divided government. And so I prefer divided government. It's a little bit of forced bipartisanship if they want to get anything at all done. And I think it's a way to weed out the really, really bad and dangerous ideas. So I agree with his sentiment. But I know why folks are so mad at him. Folks on the left, obviously, because he's saying vote for Republicans in congressional races. And I've said this before. Twitter has long been a platform, I think, that has been more favorable to the left. Folks who are Republican have seen their thoughts and opinions, I think, censored by Twitter at greater levels. You saw so much stuff censored during the pandemic that ultimately turned out to be true or to be a possibility, stuff that would never be censored today. And I think the left also realizes what a powerful platform something like Twitter is to reach voters and to ultimately help win elections. And so to see now someone who doesn't support Democrats, at least this election cycle, own Twitter and push out the vote for Republicans on his platform, they feel this tool of theirs slipping through their grasp, and they're terrified by it. And to be clear, I don't want Twitter to become some hyper-partisan place. I don't want Elon Musk to do something to Twitter that would boost Republican voices unfairly or that would unfairly target voices on the left. I don't want that either. But to suggest that Elon Musk can't share his opinion on Twitter about the elections because he owns Twitter is absolute absurdity. And I think it just shows the desperation of folks who feel like they're losing their grasp on this platform. Okay, briefly, I want to talk about 2024. I know none of us almost snorted. I know I'm trying to snort less because it's not ladylike. So I need to have like one of those snort jars and I'll put a dollar in it every time I snort and donate it to some child's lemonade stand at the end of the year. Now you guys are all going to email me when I snort and say I owe money to the snort jar. I'll work on that. I'll get one. I don't want to talk about 2024 as much as you don't, but I mean, we've heard now that Donald Trump, it seems like he's definitely going to run for president. He's been teasing that. And Axios, I believe it was, had an article saying that he's eyeing maybe a November 14th announcement or sooner if things go really, really well for the candidates he's endorsed tomorrow. But his daughter, Tiffany, is getting married at Mar-a-Lago on November 12th. So there's a thought that he'll allow her to have that day, that celebration, and then he'll announce his 2024 campaign on November 14th. So we're going to dive right into another election cycle, which it just, I wish we could have a break, right? And you just think of how long that's going to last. So it'll be two full years of a presidential election cycle. And then we'll kind of have to wait and see what happens with Democrats because, you know, Joe Biden still claims he's going to run again, which he's not. 100%. I mean, I will quit this podcast. That's how much I have faith in the fact that Joe Biden's not going to run again. The same with Governor Jay Inslee in Washington. My haters would love that. But it's not going to happen because he's not going to run again. And so we'll see whether Democrats are going to coalesce around Kamala Harris or realize that that is not their best bet and somehow push aside this woman of color who, you know, they launched into that position because of the color of her skin and because of her gender, two things that shouldn't matter at all. And now it'll be interesting to see if Democrats have to back away from her and how that's going to look because they have prioritized these characteristics that matter not at all. They prioritized identity above all else. And now how are they going to back away from that? Are they going to push this woman of color to the side? Oh, that won't go over well with some of their base. So it'll be interesting to see what Democrats do. But obviously, former President Donald Trump, if he runs again, he is not going to be unopposed. Sometimes you would see a party coalesce around the standard bearer, you know, the former president, and the national GOP might do that. But we know that there are other folks who are eyeing a run, like Mike Pompeo, who was in Washington. I sat down with him for an event not too long ago, and he wouldn't rule out the possibility. It sounds like he's laying the groundwork for a 2024 bid, of course, the former Secretary of State under Trump. And then Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis is the obvious one, and Donald Trump knows it. And Donald Trump knows that Ron DeSantis is incredibly popular. I think it's going to be a bloodbath in that gubernatorial race in Florida. We'll talk to my sister about it on Friday, but I think Ron DeSantis beats Charlie Crist handedly. But Donald Trump has now taken to insulting Ron DeSantis, which I think is an odd strategy. And he's been blasted for it by conservative pundits. I mean, Matt Walsh is like, what are you doing, dude? Because Donald Trump was at this campaign rally. You know, he's been around the country trying to support some of the candidates he's endorsed. And he has now all of a sudden out of the blue floated a nickname for Ron DeSantis.
Trump at 71, Ron DeSanctimonious at 10%.
Ron DeSanctimonious. Now, don't get me wrong. That's creative. Donald Trump is known for giving people nicknames. But why would you insult a Republican governor who's popular, a conservative Republican governor whose policies you're very aligned with, days before an election? That makes no sense. And it comes down to being petty. It comes down to Donald Trump's ego. And I've believed this about Donald Trump all along. His ego matters more than anything. It matters more than pushing the policies he claims to care about. It matters more than his supporters. It matters more than the country. Because if he cared first and foremost about his supporters, about the country, and about his policies, he wouldn't be attacking Ron DeSantis days before Ron DeSantis is on the ballot. The only thing that comes down to his ego is he cares about his 2024 presidential campaign. Could have waited a couple days after the election to insult Ron DeSantis, but no. He had to go with his Ron DeSanctimonious. I mean, come on, don't you see that? You've got to see that. Even if you are a diehard supporter of Donald Trump, you have to see that he's not acting in the best interest of the people who support him and of the people who support his ideas. It makes no sense for him to go after Ron DeSantis before the election, if not for his ego. So it'll be interesting to see how this all shapes up and where the rift will be in the Republican Party between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. Of the two of them, I mean, I'd much prefer Ron DeSantis, although I think he can get a little petty against his political opponents, and I'd like to see just someone who just has their nose down doing the job. So we'll see how all this shapes up. But make no mistake, you are going to have just a sliver of time after Tuesday, tiny little sliver, to enjoy some peace and quiet on the political front. Because as soon as Donald Trump announces his campaign, we are in for 2 years of a full-fledged, probably unhinged on both sides, presidential cycle. I'll be there going through it with you. But I really encourage you to take advantage of maybe Wednesday and Thursday. And once you know how the races you care about shape up, try to take a break from even this show if you need to. That's fine with me. If you need to take a couple episodes off and just enjoy peace and quiet before the true insanity begins. The following segment is brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. As we all wait to see what's going to happen in Tuesday's election, I know there's a lot at stake for some of us personally, certainly for the country. I would encourage you also to look past Tuesday, to look past this election, and to really commit yourself to holding especially the candidates you voted for accountable for what they do next. This election cycle, perhaps more than any other in my career as a political journalist, there have been so many promises made by candidates. You know, Democrats have taken a complete turn on public safety. We are in a period of record crime rates. In fact, I read today that Washington State just broke its yearly record for homicides, and it's only the beginning of November. So far, there have been 327 homicides in Washington State this year. The previous record was last year at 325. And so to break it on, gosh, November 7th is horrifying. And so you've had these Democratic candidates, not only for the state legislature, but for congressional seats, who have really come out and sort of acted as if they're going to take a harder stance on public safety, that they're going to back away from some of the dangerous policies and some of the dangerous rhetoric they engaged in that I really believe got us to this place. But I think the proof is going to be in what they do in the weeks and months after this election. In Washington State, there is a legislative session that will begin in January, and there are things to be fixed. There is a disastrous law that dramatically limited police pursuits in our state. We've talked about it a lot here on the podcast. And for Democrats who ran on a commitment to improve public safety, will they vote to fix that law? Will they make good on their promises to voters? I think that's going to be a huge test for Democrats. And I think Democrats in Olympia, it's possible they maintain both the House and the Senate. And especially if they retain control, are they going to forget about all these promises that were made to appease voters? Were those promises just to appease voters? Or are they going to buckle down and realize that we are in the midst of a true public safety crisis and they need to make good on their word? They need to fix that pursuit law. They need to fix the Blake decision, which basically made personal drug possession legal, which has led to a further degradation of public safety and law and order in our communities. So if Democrats can maintain control in one chamber of Congress or in the Washington State House or Senate, then they need to prove to voters that they meant what they said for the past few months. And we need to hold them to that. And the same is true for Republican candidates when it comes to the economy. Republicans have run on this idea that they can rein in out-of-control spending in Washington, D.C., that they can help bring down costs for American families. That is a huge responsibility. And it wasn't enough, and it's not enough for them to just say, Democrats have contributed to this. They have to come in with solutions, because that is going to be the most, especially for members of Congress, it is going to be the most pressing issue at hand, is to bring down costs for American families. You know, I gave a speech, this was in the spring, to the mainstream Republicans of Washington. And at the time, that was before the fall of Roe. And so it looked like there was nothing stopping Republicans from having a complete blowout night on Tuesday. And I want to read from my prepared remarks, because as I was speaking to them and saying, look, you know, I understand that you really are looking at this midterm election and realizing that you could get some of your power back, but I want you to take that opportunity seriously. I want you to understand the seriousness of the moment. And here's what I said. I said, your challenge is to meet the moment. It's understandable to be excited, to see this as your chance to take back power, but it is just as important to see it as the incredible responsibility that it is. While the position that Republicans are in this year is a promising one politically, it presents itself because Americans are struggling, I told them. Moms are standing in front of empty store shelves wondering how they're going to feed their infants. Small business owners are standing in front of the shops they spent their life savings to open, worrying how much longer they can make payroll. Police officers are standing face to face with violent criminals, asking how far away the closest backup is. Families are standing over the graves of their young sons, wanting to know what more could have been done to prevent the gang violence that stole their lives and their potential. Yes, while 2022 presents an opportunity for Republicans, that opportunity comes with profound responsibility, I told them. So you have to promise me something. If you finally get the power back that you've been working toward for so long, you have to promise me that you will remember what it's like not to have it. And what I mean by that is, when you look back at the pandemic, at one-party rule and how that was handled, you know, cutting out an entire party from the equation because you don't agree with them politically, but a party that could have brought good ideas to the table to help our country and our state and our communities during one of the most pressing crises we've ever faced. Yet Democrats made it political, rather than welcoming as many people into the fold as they could. And I urged Republicans, if you win back control, don't do the same thing. When it comes to people's lives and the crime crisis, when it comes to people's livelihoods and the state of the economy, we can and we should welcome as many ideas into the fold as possible. Because the only thing that should matter is making the lives of Americans better. And I hope that whatever candidates win, they are committed to doing just that moving forward. The preceding segment was brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, just to set your expectations a little bit for election night, if you're in Washington State, you know how this works. We're a mail-in voting state, and so we probably won't know a lot of the close races on Tuesday night. You'll have a big initial ballot drop at 8 p.m. There might be a couple counties that have stragglers coming in, and then there'll be another update on the Secretary of State's website the following day. So just temper your expectations in really close races. Like I predict that the 8th Congressional District, the race for U.S. Senate in Washington State, these are probably going to be pretty close. And I don't think you're going to have candidates coming out and declaring victory the night of. So just hold tight and wait until a few more ballots come in to call races. There'll be races on the East Coast and other states that don't rely as heavily on mail-in voting as us, where those races will be called. Of course, we're watching key races in Florida, in Georgia, in Pennsylvania. I am so eager to find out what happens in that Pennsylvania Senate race between John Fetterman and Mehmet Oz. Also, the gubernatorial race in New York, the fact that Democrats polling shows they might lose that race, that would be insane. And there are swing districts all across the country that we're going to be watching very closely as well. So again, first ballot drop, 8 p.m. Pacific time in Washington State, and that is when you're going to get your first real look at how the races are shaping up. That's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. Remember, for Undivided subscribers, Wednesday morning, we're going to have a live Q&A. I'll update you on some of the races and where they stand, races in Washington and across the country. You can ask me any of the pressing questions that you might have from the results of the night before. If you'd like to take part in that, you can join us on Patreon, patreon.com/undivided. Or you can become a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com /support. And if you use the promo code election on locals, you'll get 3 months for free. So now's a really great time to utilize that because you can be part of this post-election night coverage live Q&A on Wednesday morning. So be on the lookout for those links on Patreon and on locals. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. And above all else, make sure to get those ballots in. I'll see you all on Wednesday.